Welcome to Flying the Coop, a podcast about rethinking how business works and who it should work for.
We are Janelle and Anna, small business owners learning in public as we turn our company Strange Birds into a worker-owned co-op. Today, we're interviewing Nancy Disbro, founder of Neurosity. Nancy is an executive coach and consultant who helps high-achieving professionals, especially those with ADHD or dyslexia, rewire how they lead and work so they can stop spinning their wheels and start building systems that actually work for their brains. She also advises companies on how to better support the neurodivergent folks already on their teams, even if they don't realize that's who they're working with, which we should chat about. And she has a very cool podcast called The Dyslexic Maverick. Maverick. Yeah. I think of that Looney Tunes cartoon. Only a few people will understand this. Okay. Please don't cut this, Janelle. It's great content. So the podcast, we'll definitely want to hear more about.
We were introduced to Nancy by our mutual pal, Haley Boning. And after one chat together, it was like, okay, yes, exactly. This person gets it. Let's hear a lot more from her. There's a lot of noise out there about neurodiversity right now, which I actually think is a great thing. When something goes mainstream enough to like start annoying people with its omnipresence, that means the zeitgeist is shifting, and that's really cool. Nancy cuts through all that noise with her sharp thinking, her deep empathy, and her quite practical solutions. I love her approach because she's not trying to fix anybody. She's trying to fix the conditions that can make work feel quite broken for people, especially people who've spent years thinking the problem was them. So to kick us off, Nancy, you've said before that the system isn't broken. It just maybe wasn't built for certain kinds of brains. When did you start to realize that for yourself?
Oh my gosh. I think I've always known that I think differently than other people. I mean, it was really young, probably, you know, first or second grade, honestly, was I started to notice that I thought differently. But to be honest, in the corporate world, it wasn't until about 8 years ago that I understood more that like my brain didn't fit the traditional mold in a way that everyone was kind of hoping and thinking that it would. And also the way that it didn't fit was also the reason for my success as well. So it's like this kind of like weird oxymoron of like, it didn't fit, but that's also the reason that I was successful as an HR leader too. And then, so from there, it's like, what doesn't fit? And then like, what do I do about it? Right. And what have I always done in the past to kind of fit the mold? Because I was fitting into a box that I thought I should fit into. And quite honestly, I still catch myself doing it today, right? Like I still am like, wait, hold on. I just need to be me and just like tap into my own superpowers.
How did you start seeing the specific ways in which your brain working expressed themselves in you being really good at what you did?
Yeah. So looking back at it, I have always seen, and I always will see, things in like a very big picture way. I call it my helicopter view. So I see an entire business, an entire family, an entire house remodel, whatever it is that I'm looking at, in the full, pretty much like done picture, right? So like I had a lot of different jobs, which a lot of ADHD and dyslexic people do. We have very like squiggly career paths. They're not straight and linear and typical by any means. But what I noticed was that I would look at a business and I would hear a problem that we were trying to solve at the table. And I would think about all of the different pieces coming together in a very different way. And what different things would pop up and different patterns would pop up for me. And there were so many times that I was sitting at that table thinking, you guys, it's right here. We are like literally staring at the solution. And in younger Nancy, you wouldn't say it. Like I would wait for everyone else's answers. And I'm like, I don't think that's it. Like, I don't think so. No. And they knew it wasn't it either. And then I would say it and they would say like, oh my gosh, like, why were you holding out for so long? Like, why didn't you just say that at the beginning? And so I started to build confidence of like, I do see something that other people, it at the very least, it would take them a while to see. It's just very natural for me. I also had this very strong emotional connection with people that I can't really describe, but it has really played well in my HR career too. And I didn't know that part either at the beginning, but I, and most dyslexics, about 80% of dyslexics are above average when it comes to like emotional intelligence and feeling feels from other people. And just, and I don't know how I feel that, but in the business world, it really helped. One, I think people just trust me because I wear my heart on my sleeve too. And so having that combination helps people kind of open up and talk a little bit more freely. But it also gave me a way to pull back the layers on them and their strengths and their skill sets and like what they're really good at. So many times in business, we don't hire for skill set, we hire for like what you did before and what your resume looks like. And those are two completely different things. A skill set is an amazing like picture of all the things that you're really, really just naturally good at. And that hardly ever aligns really like innately with what the job that we're doing in the workplace. And so looking back, that's what I did. I just peeled back the layers on people, let them talk, ask them what their favorite job they ever had was, why that was their favorite job. What do they love? What do they hate? And I would just then think of the business and think of the needs of the business and match the two together. And very simply put now, I call it right brain, right seat, right? Mm. I get the right brains in the right seat and it's magic when it works. And I do it no matter what, like if I'm getting paid for it or not, it's just what I do.
Can you talk about your own personal experience of feeling like, I don't fit into this structure and a little, that's hard to feel, right? Like I'm not neurodivergent, but I didn't fit into a corporate structure for very specific reasons. And there's some emotional pain that is in there. What was the first thing that you did to shift your working structure to better fit you and not the system around you?
The one thing that has always, I would say, more frustrates me and just like I beat myself up over mentally a lot is my spelling. I would send out, I was the leader of an HR team, and I would send out an email to all employees and it would have a spelling mistake. And again, people, you know, would probably say like, well, didn't you proofread it? I proofread that thing probably 4 or 5 times and it doesn't look wrong to me. And also, like, if you don't understand how hard it is, it just looks like I don't care. And it looks like I'm not trying hard enough, or I didn't spend enough time, or I just whipped out that email. Yeah. I get promoted this position. I was the head of VP of HR, and I had an executive administrator to help me with life. And the first day I told her, I'm dyslexic, I will have to have you proofread everything that I do. And she told me this a few months after we started working together. She goes, I thought you were just trying to be cute or funny or silly and kind of, you know, earn my trust or whatever, make me feel good. And she said, I'm so glad you told me that, because after day two of reading how you wrote, I would have thought there's no way that this lady should earn this position, or like she must know somebody to have gotten this role, because there's no way that an executive in leading an HR team could write like this. And also she's so well-spoken that like, I don't know what's going on, but this is crazy. And she's like, I really would have probably second-guessed everything that you did had you not told me. So like, It was, I'm so glad she said that, because it makes it so much better for me to tell people now, right? Like it's always good, and I encourage other people to say it as well. It's the most important thing that we can do is say like what we're good at and what we're not, right? Like everybody has strengths and weaknesses.
So one of the questions that we have is exactly the story that you just said, right? That feeling of, if you hadn't told this person, like, this is who I am. These assumptions that we make about folks, because from school on, we are trained that this is what a competent person looks like and sounds like. So what's something that you wish more teams, not just leaders, but teams, understood about supporting neurodivergent folks at the workplace?
Yeah. So one thing that just pops into my brain immediately is this, and this is a more of an ADHD thing, but I am famous for interrupting in meetings and like blurting out ideas. And it's not because we don't care about other people, what they're thinking or saying. It's one is impulse control. We don't have much of it. There's also a working memory part of it where we have trouble holding information in our brains for too long and we lose it if we don't spit it out. And so part of it is that we have a good idea or what we think is a good idea. And so we want to share it. That is one thing. The other thing that I think is really important and people don't realize, and it's one of those things that makes sense once you know it. Like you just have to know the information about your team. Hyperactivity looks very different in women and also in adults. So what we think of as ADHD and like little Johnny, you know, putting stuff in the light socket, it looks different when you are either a female or and when you grow up, right? Like you don't still see the 42-year-old male sticking things in light sockets, right? For the most part, unless
you yeah. hope not.
Yeah, I know. As I say that, I'm like, actually, you probably do. But so it's going to look different in the workplace, and it doesn't mean that they're not hyperactive or. It usually transfers more to mentally hyperactive and less physically hyperactive. And if it is physically, you just don't see it. So they're tapping their foot, they're playing with a pen, they're messing with the straw wrapper at dinner, they're pacing while they're watching a movie. Like they're doing all these things that don't look super odd. Honestly, like you don't really notice them for the most part. But a lot, and especially a lot of women, are mentally hyperactive. And so they have 42 things racing through their brain at any given time. And it's so hard to pick one to say out loud or to focus on or to it's actually ADHD is not a lack of focus. It's actually that we focus on too many things at one time and we can't discern the one thing that we should be focusing on and push the others away. So those are the two things that I think if you know those, you can start to spot them in teams, whether they're self-diagnosed or not. And a lot of times I get questions like, do you need to be diagnosed? It doesn't matter, right? Like we all have our brains. A label is helpful. I think it's very helpful to understand our brains and then to like research and do all the good things to help ourselves, but it's not necessary. And if you're a leader and you start to see some of the patterns that we're talking about, just try it out. And if it works, I think you got your answer.
And now I'm the one with 42 thoughts floating around in my head.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Right? The unimind. I'll start with the note that I wrote because that'll help. The book that's constantly floating through my mind as you're talking about this is Laziness Does Not Exist by Devin Price. The thesis of the book is that when you see somebody doing something that you're tempted to interpret as like, they just don't care or they're not putting enough effort in, or, you know, how did they possibly get to this position? Like you were saying, the answer is never that they're lazy. Like that's not a real thing. There's always reasons behind why the thing isn't being done in the way that you expect it to be done. And I think that that principle alone could really help teams of all sorts of different brains be sensitive to the diverse needs of those different brains, because there's a lot of different ways to be neurodiverse, right? And I think it's a awfully high expectation that everyone learn every different way that every brain could. This is not possible. But if we assume good intent and we assume that it's not because somebody's being lazy or they don't care, then we start to get curious and we can ask and we can listen and we create spaces where it feels safer for people to come forward and say, actually, I work this way. Actually, I would prefer to do the work in this way. Actually, I need this kind of accommodation, and create more flexible workspaces for everybody. And Nancy, I know that that's specifically work that you do within corporate environments of like helping them create spaces that are more conducive to that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. And to your point, Janelle, it is, if you are just curious, you will get your answers that you need, right? Like, so some of the questions that I ask people, it's just like, hey, what has worked for you in the past? Have you had a leader that you did work well with? Have you come across this situation before? What worked? What didn't? How can I help you, right? Like, tell me how you're feeling. Like, let's work through this together. if you do any one of those questions and start the conversation, you will be 100 times ahead of where you are, right? So just curiosity. That's all you really need. I will say, though, that a lot of people have never thought about this either. So you might be asking a question that they haven't been asked before or really thought about. So it may take a little time, but you can get there. As far as the workplaces, there's definitely some things that I think are really, really important. One is lighting. So I think one, like, natural light can be amazing for some people. Some people like it really dark, though. The other thing people don't think about, but like the humming of a fluorescent light, it can be absolutely, like, it will take your brain into a whole new level, and whatever work needed to be done is not going to happen.
For folks not watching the video version, both Janelle and I, at the phrase "the humming of a fluorescent light," like, closed their eyes, leaned back, and was like, "Lord, no!" moment. So, yeah,
it is a very real thing, and then once you're in tune with it, it becomes more. Right. So, like, once you hear it, like, you can't unhear it kind of thing. And it just can go from bad to worse. The other piece is, like, noise management and just, like, placement of desks is really important, too. So it's, you know, you don't want to put a person that has ADHD next to the copy machine, next to the water cooler. I mean, like, the bathroom, like, you don't want to put them in the most central spot, because they are literally, the chances of them being distracted are going to be 100 times higher than if they were facing a corner. And they'll like it too. Like, I truly believe everybody comes to work every single day wanting to do their best work, right? Like, they want to, you just have to give them the place to do it. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, like, the noise levels of things. So there's distractions, but then there's also, you know, just background noise or traffic or whatever it is. And so just being cognizant of that is really helpful as well. Some people prefer headphones, some people don't. I will say, since COVID, a lot of people went home for work, and they found these different workplaces that really, like, worked for them in their own home, right? Some people really like just a background TV on, just to, like, kind of, like, keep their brain going, which makes sense when you understand ADHD, because we have so much going on in our brain that if it's actually kind of background processing a TV show in the background or music in the background, it actually allows us to focus better, because there's only 2 things that we're focusing on instead of the 42 that we have to pick from. So, you know, a noise machine works for some people, it doesn't for other. Lighting works for some. A heavy blanket across your lap is very comforting. A hoodie over, like, your head to, like, cue your brain to, like, focus and do the work. There's all these little things that, you know, it's really personal decision. I think where workplaces can kind of get challenging, though, is, you know, dress codes, right? Like, I know hoodies aren't necessarily the most professional thing in the world. I get it. I don't know that I'd want one if I came into, like, a law office and saw my lawyer in, like, a hoodie hunkered down either, right? Like, that might not be professional. But a lot of jobs don't require that. And so is it something that's, like, actually necessary, or is it just something that's always been done, I think is a really good, like, challenging statement for yourself internally, right? Like, why are we doing this? Is this really important? A receptionist should have different requirements maybe than somebody in the back office of an IT room, right? Like, that just makes sense. And I think it's easily explained in the business when you explain it to people. Like, we don't have the hard conversations about this stuff. Like, just say it. The receptionist is in the front of the office. They're the ones representing the company. And he or she is going to have a different level of expectations on many things than a person in a back office IT world, right? Like, it's just different. And we should treat people differently because that's how the world works.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of something that, so I'm going to do an ultimate frisbee analogy. Sorry, everyone, but not sorry. I play ultimate frisbee, and it actually makes me think of something that happened at practice last night, right? This is a team that I have been playing with for, we've played together for 3 years. We have new players come in and join us all the time. So I was playing with, we were on a scrimmage, and the person who I was interacting the most with on my team, she's new to the team this year. So we're still getting to know, like, okay, they really like it when the throw goes this way, or their favorite way to move is in that direction. So I can anticipate that, right? And I noticed this one point where I'm standing there and I'm like, this throw, all of my other handlers are like, yeah, they wouldn't hesitate to throw it. But she super hesitated, right? Like, didn't throw it at all, to the point where we were like, oh no, this is bad. So afterward, I went up and I was like, hey, I noticed that you didn't throw that. Is that an uncomfortable throw for you? Like, how could I have made that more comfortable for you? No one had ever asked her that question. And so I think that it's the noticing of like, oh, everyone else does this pattern. Why did this person not? And instead of being going up to her and being like, why the hell didn't you throw it to me? I was wide open. I was more like, yo, I noticed that. Is there a way that I could have made it like made you feel more confident that that throw was viable? Right. And so I think it's things like that, that just asking the question and noticing when someone doesn't follow the playbook. Again, it doesn't mean that they stink at the game or at their job. It just means that like that specific route was not necessarily comfortable for them. And that doesn't mean it's the only option around.
Yeah, it goes back to positive intent, right? If you always assume positive intent, she wouldn't be out there playing if she didn't want to win, right? Like, yeah. Of course. Yeah. So yeah, just getting curious about it is so important. It's the same in business, right? Like everything that, like your coworker or your peer or your supervisor, like sometimes you just have to be curious up too, right? It's not all about who's on your team, but it's curious up. And it's amazing how many people have never been asked, like, how can I help you?
Mm-hmm. I'm still thinking about a thing that you said earlier. It's kind of doing the rounds in my brain of how we hire for like what's on your resume. We don't necessarily hire for your skill set because a lot of that can be invisible. And then I'm thinking of as a business owner who gets to define the ways in which I want to work. How can I think more about designing a business that maps to my actual skill set instead of just here's a list of the things that I've done in the past or that I feel able to offer in the future?
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes of all times is by Naval Ravikant. And he asks the question, basically, what is play for you and feels like work to everyone else or looks like work to everyone else, right? Like, what do you absolutely love to do and you would do it if you didn't get paid a single dime? And it feels like work to everybody else. And we all have those things, right? So like, I always encourage people to start there. Like start with like the one thing you do no matter what. Like nobody can actually stop me from coaching. Like I'm going to coach somebody every single day that I can just because I love it, not because I'm getting paid for it, right? So that's one thing. So finding like the one thing that you really, really love to do. The other piece is on the flip side, right? So like, what does somebody really, really just, it takes all of their energy to do? Not that they can't do it, because a lot of us can do a lot of different things, right? Like I can write an article. It just takes me so much time that it's not an efficient use of my time. And other people are so good at it, right? Like they can just do it. And I'm like, oh, I could say it, but I couldn't write it kind of thing. And so really finding like what drains your energy. And there's, I do with my coaching clients, I do like an energy audit. So we actually go through an entire week of every 15 minutes of writing down exactly what they're doing, if it provides value. And then if it's draining their energy or giving them energy. And it's the best place to start. And it's a little time consuming, right? Like 1 week is a lot every 15 minutes, but it just reveals so much about a work week.
And that happened between Janelle and I when we were figuring out how to work together. Our brains are incredibly different. Like, oh, buddy, polar opposites in many ways. Most ways?
I don't know about that. A lot of overlap.
There's a lot of overlap. But in terms of like how we get the work done, not what work we're doing, super different. We use Notion, and it started as we were thinking about it as building an operating system. And then we realized, no, we're building a translation tool between our brains. And once we started thinking of it that way, it came together better.
You also learn through a system of division of tasks like that, that you don't have to be good at everything. And that being good at and responsible for some things is enough, and you are valid, and the things that you do are valuable. I learn this every day working with Anna, really, because like they said, our brains are quite different. And when we do complex projects, it turns out that they're awfully complementary. And it's quite amazing for me to get to shine doing something like data mining and organizing a giant spreadsheet full of all kinds of crap. And then they come along and they write the metaphor that's going to help everybody understand it. And could I do that? Yes, I could. Are they better at it? Yes, they are. And it's wonderful to be able to have both of those skill sets shine. I can speak it. It feels validating. I think I'd go so far as to say that. And like running a business that has built-in validation in the way that you do things is a good way to make it last a long time. So then I want to flip the lens around, because we've been talking a lot about what you can do if you're running your own thing, which is more our world. But what if you are working within a larger structure that you don't control? How can you advocate for yourself to be able to shine in the ways that you're able to shine and get what you need to be supported otherwise?
It can be tough. I don't want to sugarcoat this, because there are some organizations that just... like they just want the best for people. Honestly, I think most organizations do, but then like when it comes down to it, it's a little bit harder to actually put their, you know, leadership where they say they want it. The rules aren't written for neurodivergence in the workplace, to be honest. Like there's the ADA and there's different supports that are supposed to help. And to be honest, from a past HR leader, they don't. Like, they weren't written for differently wired brains. They were written for people in wheelchairs and, you know, different more physical conditions in the workplace. And so I really think the best thing that people can do is get clear on what type of supports would work best for them. Also, most HR leaders, I mean, I'm trying to do my best to change this, but most HR leaders that I talk to do not know what to do if somebody comes to them and says, I have ADHD, how can you help me? An HR leader isn't going to know. Their leader probably isn't going to know. And so I would really encourage people, like, do your own research, play with things on your own first in your own space if you can. There are some little things that don't look different, honestly. Like, you can have a whiteboard in your office and have like the top three priorities. And if your manager comes by, you can ask like, hey, these are the three things I'm working on. Is this aligned with what you're thinking? Right? Because a lot of times we will get distracted with all these random tasks and not work on the three things that are important. The other thing is, you know, maybe you can't have two earbuds in, but maybe you can have one, or maybe you can have like a weighted lap blanket, right? That's not even visible. It's the same color as your, you know, pants or something like that. Like, there are like little things. I also suggest walking and exercise and getting outside. Like, you have to give your brain space to think. And if you can do a walking meeting, even better. I don't know. Anna and I are in Ohio, so that works about 4 months out of the year. But for the rest of the time, it's hard, but we can find other ways to do it. I think the other really important thing is, like, there's a lot of things in your life you can control. It's not always your workplace and it's not always your leader, but diet, exercise, talking through it with somebody, even a coach, can really help too, because it's just, you feel alone. Everybody that I've worked with is like, I thought I was the only one feeling this way. And then it turns out that you're not.
No, I think my biggest takeaway from this conversation, there is a lot, but a thing I am going to go try is the energy audit. I've never thought about that before.
If anybody wants my, like, the matrix for the time and energy audit, just message me on Instagram and I'll send it to you. So, and you can do it yourself. And yeah, I'm happy to share it.
We will put that in the show notes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. Flying the Coop is brought to you by Strange Birds, a strategic messaging co-op for businesses who care loudly. From websites to onboarding flows, launches to long-term strategy, find us at strangebirds.land.